All right, we're going to switch gears for a second. I just want to ask you something on education reform, because I've seen your stuff all over. You're a very vocal advocate for reforming our nation's educational system. Let's hear the Whitney Tilson plan for reforming America's schools.
Well, let me give you a little bit of background. My parents are teachers, and I helped start Teach for America, and then got involved with KIPP Charter Schools. KIPP, Knowledge is Power program. I've been on the board of KIPP here in New York for 10 years, and so I've been, and that's only a few of the things I've been involved with. So I've been, really quite entrepreneurial in this space. And by the way, the first thing I will recommend, I pound the table, recommend that you go see the new movie Waiting for Superman. I actually worked with the filmmakers, provided a few of the charts that they use in the movie, and if you stay till the very, very, very end, I'm at the very end of the credits. I'm very proud of that. But I think it's a powerful movie that is going to change the widespread view about our schools and what is possible with them. And it's a fabulous movie, and it made my wife cry. It's a very powerful, emotional movie, but it's also very analytical, has great data in it as well. So it's really a tremendous movie. Highly recommend it, and that will give people more insight than I can give in a couple minutes here. But basically, what has happened in this country is over the past 40 years or so, our educational system has stagnated. It isn't that it's gotten worse. It's that we're spending twice as much money per pupil, inflation adjusted. It's gone in the early 70s from about $5,000 a pupil to today. The national average is about $10,000 per pupil, K through 12. Yet, on any measure, likelihood, the percentage of young people who get a college degree, a 2 or 4 year college degree, the high school graduation rate versus the dropout rate, SAT scores, NAEP scores, on any metric, we have flatlined. And so despite spending twice as much money, and the problem is that the rest of the world hasn't flatlined. We used to have the highest number of young people get college degrees. We're now 12th in the world. We used to be near the top in math and science and reading achievement. Now we're 25th to 30th in the world. In other words, every other country in the world is on a steep upward trajectory, and we've flatlined for 30 or 40 years. And in fairness, it's not all the fault of our schools. I read somewhere the average young person today spends 7.5 hours in front of a screen every day, about almost 4 hours of that television screen. The average 12 to 17-year-old in this country, half of 12 to 17-year-olds in this country send 50 text messages a day, and a third of them send 100 text messages a day. So there's a lot of stuff going on outside of schools that I think is dumbing down our children, but our schools are clearly letting us down. There's sort of widespread mediocrity. There's some very good schools, but then there's widespread mediocrity in the middle and really catastrophic failure in mostly schools in big cities and serving low-income minority kids. There are a lot of complex reasons behind this, but basically we've allowed a big bloated system to develop that is run for the benefit of adults, not for what is best for children. And there's a fundamental political inefficiency at work, because children don't vote and they don't have a union, whereas the adults do. And so attempts to change the system, make it more accountable and serve students better, run into the entrenched interests of adults and the politicians who are co-opted by those adults. And so that's one of the areas that I've been focused on as well, to try and create a voice for what's best for kids in the system and bring about needed reforms.
All right, Whitney, we're going to give you a loudspeaker now to break any piece of news or sound off on anything you feel is not getting sufficient attention in the media today.
Are you specifically asking for something investment-related or just beyond that? Any issue?
Any issue that you think is not getting any opinion, any news, anything you think is not being reported enough or that you want to break yourself?
Just very, very big picture. I'm increasingly worried about the future of this country. And the reason is because I think we're an incredible country with enormous advantages over virtually every other country in the world. But we face big issues that are going to require people coming together, reaching compromises to address these big issues. I'm increasingly almost in a state of despair about the national dialogue and how, rather than coming together as a country, and unifying, we're splintering. And I think part of it is the sort of the rise of the internet, where everyone can have their own customized news that in almost all cases people choose to read stuff and to watch television that reinforces their own point of view, whatever it is. And so a combination of the rise of the internet but also the media on both the left and the right, I think, has gotten more extreme and has pushed people to greater extremes. So we're splintering. And you see it in Congress, you see it in television shows and in newspapers and so forth. And it makes me worry tremendously about whether this political polarization is going to lead to paralysis. And therefore, we won't address the mega issues in this country, like immigration, like reducing our dependence on foreign oil and adopting a sensible energy policy, like the things like Social Security and Medicare and so forth, which will bankrupt us unless we make some changes to those, for example. Those are enormously difficult political issues to resolve, even when you have sort of centrists and people willing to work together. And I see no evidence of that. And things are going in the other direction. And it makes me worry that it's not that the world, the U.S. is all of a sudden going to lose its prosperity and we become a third world country, but more that we just sort of stagnate over many decades and our growth rate is sort of feeble. It's not that it's negative. It's not that we become poorer. It's just that the period of really great American innovation and dynamism and prosperity sort of peters out. We'll still be fine. This is not a total gloom and doom, but it sort of bums me out, honestly. So there's my sort of big picture, big concern about the future of this country.
All right, well, we thank you for giving that. Now that we've got the tough questions, so to speak, out of the way, we just have a couple more lighthearted questions we ask all our first-time guests on Zing Talk. Okay. What was your first and what was your worst job?
Well, my first job, I mean, I had a big job in college. I ran College Pro Painters in Wellesley for 2 summers, Wellesley, Mass., and, you know, I had 30 employees, and we painted 60 houses in 2 summers, and boy, did I learn a lot about managing people and managing customers and so forth. I ran a big operation but was not a very good people manager, and so I certainly, my business was not nearly as profitable as it should have been given its size, and I learned that it was the people management was not my forte. So that was sort of my first job. My worst job, I've been lucky. I came out of college. I worked for 6 months at helping get Teach for America started, which was great. Had a great couple years at Boston Consulting Group. And then after business school, I worked 5 years for Michael Porter, who's a fabulous and dynamic, brilliant guy, and then started my own business. And so I've never really had a bad job, and that's very lucky.
Do you have a hero?
My parents are certainly heroes. Certainly getting involved in education reform and seeing a lot of terrible, terrible parenting out there. Again, I don't blame the schools entirely for how poorly our young people are doing in this country. And if I could push a button and fix all the parents or fix all the schools in America, I'd push the parent button in a heartbeat. But I've gained an even greater appreciation for my parents. In the investing world, no question, Warren Buffett has been a hero, both for his investment success, but also just for his integrity and his willingness to share his learning and his techniques so that other people can benefit from them.
All right, this last one is Ben Zinga's trademark question. What was the best and what was the worst investment decision that you've ever made?
The best investment decision I ever made was to take in my partner, Glenn Tung, and rather than just running the business by myself. It's made the job a lot more fun. We've made better returns for our investors, and I gave up half my business to do it, to bring in a 50-50 partner. But that was a great investment decision for my business. In the investing world, the single most important decision we ever made was in early 2008 when we came across new data about the housing market. And our view at that point was that this was sort of the consensus view. Housing prices had already declined for 18 months consecutively. The Bear Stearns hedge funds had blown up. Novastar, New Century Financial had already blown up. And the consensus view out there was that this was a subprime crisis that was mostly behind us. And we would probably be out of business if we had not come across new data and started from scratch with a fresh mind and come to a totally different conclusion that was, rather than being in the seventh inning of the housing crisis, we were in the second inning of the housing crisis, and then taking very strong steps to protect ourselves, namely by shorting virtually every housing, financial, and real estate stock that we could. That kept us in business. I shudder to think of how much money, I know how much money we lost on the long side in 2008, but fortunately we insulated ourselves and were down less than half the market in a year in which many of our friends literally went out of business. And there's an important lesson there, which is, you know, we had read what Buffett and Peter Lynch had wrote, which is don't pay any attention to the macro stuff. You know, just focus on your bottoms-up stock picking. And so that is the religion that we had grown up with for more than 10 years of professional investing at that point. And we abandoned it when we became convinced that the housing market was going to blow sky high. That was sort of a macro theme that we incorporated into our investing, into our how we managed our portfolio, and acted on it. So, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I wish I'd acted on it more forcefully. I wish I'd gotten rid of all of our long book because everything correlated in 2008. I wish I'd bought credit default swaps rather than just shorting these stocks. But at the end of the day, that was you know, we would probably be out of business if we had not made that leap. So your other question was, what was the worst investment decision I ever made? I mean, we have certainly owned some stocks that have literally gone to zero. You know, one that comes to mind is a company called Visible Genetics, which was a company that had developed a test that doctors would use for AIDS patients that would tell them what the genetic makeup was of the patient, so that they could prescribe a better cocktail of drugs for the patient. And it was very promising, exciting technology. But it was turned out to be wildly outside my circle of competence, and I failed to read the financial statements, which showed that this company was burning through cash at a rapid rate and was going to hit the wall unless they raised a lot of money. Well, they weren't able to raise a lot of money, and they did hit the wall, and so I got seduced by a sexy story and an exciting story and the fact that they were developing a product that would help people suffering from AIDS. So I got hooked. You know, I see this happen to other investors all the time, where there's a sexy, emotional, exciting story, and they don't even read the financial statements and invest in what are often promotions or frauds in some cases. So that was a very, very good lesson about letting emotions get the better of me, about not focusing on the financial statements, and critically about going way outside my circle of competence. I now realize I was the sucker at the poker table, and I had done all this work on it to convince myself that I wasn't, but, you know, there are just some sectors that I will never be the expert in, and, you know, emerging medical technologies and biotech companies are certainly fall in that category, and I've now learned my lesson, always will fall into that category.
All right, well, thanks, Whitney. That'll do it for this episode of Zing Talk. Be sure to check out www.benzinga.com for the latest market-moving news, actionable trading ideas, and insightful commentary.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes. You can find a link to do that right off of the Benzinga homepage. The music that you're listening to is Beethoven Virus by Banya and is available on the Internet Archive. All Benzinga podcasts are released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.5 license, and all other rights are reserved.